Active Radio.
What's going on, everybody? We are back. This is episode 156 of the Dark Windows podcast. My name is Kevin.
I'm Kevin. 156.
Wow. I know, it's fucking crazy, right?
I thought, and you know, wow. Crazy.
We kind of figured it's a dark and dreary, kind of shitty day here in the old 802. So what better time to record an episode about some dark and dreary shit that went on in a different place.
Yeah. So, okay. So I have a question for you.
Sure.
And you could tell me if it's true, or like if I was seeing it correctly. So you and I, because of the topic we're covering, you told me to watch the show.
Yep.
And I'm probably sure you're going to name it.
Uh-huh.
But my question is this. The guy that committed suicide.
Yes.
Did they actually use his picture from when he was dead with his brain out of his fucking skull as the cover for their CD?
They sure did.
Okay.
So we'll actually get into that.
I was just curious. Hold on 1 second.
Yeah.
I'm gonna knock my earbud out. Okay, so yeah, I was just curious because I was like, wait, is that a CD cover?
Uh-huh, and unfortunately, I can't share it, unfortunately, on the Facebook page because it will get taken down immediately.
Oh, it's graphic.
Which super sucks, but oh yeah, it's fucking gnarly. But yeah. So this is a topic that's been kind of, we've been rattling around for a while. Something I've always been fascinated with, and I know Kevin's kind of wanted to learn a little bit more about it just to, you know, because it's, again, it's fascinating. It's a really interesting topic to kind of go through. Now let me ask you a question.
Okay.
When you think of Norway, what's the first thing that comes to mind?
I don't know. Viking, I don't know. Oslo Winter Games. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Skiing. So like the 1994 Olympics, Vikings.
Skiing,
because they invented it.
Yeah, that's what comes. I mean, that's reindeer. I mean, that's what comes to my brain.
Now, what about guys covered in white face paint to make themselves look like they're dead? Giant, thick leather wrist gauntlets with nails sticking out of them, and some just really, really heavily distorted fast guitar music with it. No? Okay. So we're gonna change your mind on that one, because this week and next week we are gonna be talking about the Norwegian black metal scene and some of the crimes that were connected to that. And boy howdy, are there a bunch of them.
Yeah, apparently. I mean I know the black death metal, or they call it black metal, whatever, was like kind of from that region, the Scandinavian region, but like I guess now it's like pushed to all different parts of the world.
Oh, and yeah, people, absolutely.
But there's people that like realize that they're like, I'm not making any money off of this, you know, because it's not really all that popular. I mean, it's popular, but it's not popular.
But it's also not about making money sometimes.
Sometimes, yeah.
It's about not compromising what you want to do for music, you know?
Yeah.
So the music style itself actually dates back to early 1980s with a band called Venom, which is what a lot of people consider to be the first black metal band. And they were actually British, believe it or not. And the term black metal actually came from one of their albums. I think it was their second or third album. It's actually just titled Black Metal. And if you go back and listen to the earlier stuff, it's not like what we're going to get into with some of the other bands. It's more like Black Sabbath, but a little bit faster and louder.
Yeah.
Is what like early black metal is. And like, I can kind of like, I can get into that. That's fun. And the first band in Scandinavia to kind of pull everything together, one of the first, I should say, was a band called Bathory, who were Swedish. Their lead singer, Thomas Forsberg. And like I said, a lot of hockey names. So get ready.
Yeah.
Not Peter Forsberg, Thomas Forsberg. So easily enough to confuse. This guy probably had less, probably scored less goals, I would imagine. But being a Swede, I think being Swedish and being Canadian is kind of the same thing where like you're born and you're like from the birth canal, fall into skates and have a stick in your hand. Possibly.
Or you have skis on your on your feet.
I've never seen anybody give birth to a Swedish child, so I couldn't tell you. Bathory was basically the first band to start the trend of the like this like screaming, growling lyrics and the like the, an instrumental sound that would become very much a cornerstone to a different like variation of metal, which would be like where you get into like your Viking metal bands like Amon Amarth, Tyr, Teresa's, other bands like that.
Sons of Bottom or whatever.
No, not so much with them. Children of Bottom. They're more just like a speedy, like thrash metal kind of. It doesn't have the same kind of like almost like folk music, but just like cranked up kind of sound.
So now I wonder, was this kind of like the start of like, because it almost seems like they were either that they were about the same time and they had the kind of like the same sound as, what band am I thinking of? Oh, God damn it.
Give me a song.
I don't know any songs by him. I just know that like the guy's fucking like a monster. He's like fucking huge, but he's a nerd.
Cannibal Corpse?
Yeah. Like you
Oh, absolutely.
Know, it's like but like I was kind of thinking about that when I was watching the show. Because I was like, well, cuz I was listening to the music and I was like, okay, so, because every so often they play the music.
Yeah.
And I couldn't understand what the fuck they're saying. But I kind of had that feeling of remember when we went to Mayhem? Uh-huh. And I said, like, because the Mastodon came on and you were like, oh, man, Mastodon's pretty good. And I was like, okay. I was like, all right. I'm curious. Well, I just didn't like it just because of the fact that I couldn't hear the singer what they were saying most of the time because of the guitar and everything else.
Well, that's not normal for Mastodon. That was
I know that.
Like an engineering fuck up with this on the sound guy's fault part, because Mastodon, you can actually like when you listen to it, you can hear what you can understand what they're saying.
Yeah, but I'm saying that's kind of like what I equated it to. I was like, oh man, this sounds like what Mastodon sounded like that day that I heard them at Mayhem Fest.
Yeah,
because I was like, I can't fucking understand the goddamn word the guy's saying because the guitar is so goddamn loud.
Yeah. So, well, that was so that, again. That was that was fuck up. Like, because they're fantastic.
Yeah. But like I was saying though. That's why I equated it to, because I was like, okay, well, you know, because I knew it was a fuck up, but I mean, I was like, but these guys are purposely sounding like this, and I don't even know what the fuck they're saying. So I'm right. Like, okay.
Well, with some of it, if you listen real hard, you can understand what he's saying. And then the more you listen to it, the more you're like, this doesn't sound like somebody just slamming on a guitar. The more you listen to it, you're like, I can actually hear what they're playing and it doesn't sound half bad. You kind of have to listen to it and separate certain instruments from others. You're like, okay, well I can really hear what the guitar is doing here. And it actually sounds pretty decent.
Yeah.
You know?
But their message behind it is kind of, like, at least some of them, what is it? I don't know. Probably a guy that we're going to talk about.
Oh, yeah.
And another guy that was on the film. They're kind of like, their mentality after so long was like, our identity as a people is being like stripped away, is being perverted, raped by the Catholic faith. And I can kind of, you know, as you said, you can kind of see what they're talking about. And I can see what they're talking about, but yeah. I think it's, I don't think so much. It's a Catholic Judeo-Christian thing. I think it's an almost every religion thing, where if they come into into an area, you know, it's like, well, yours isn't right, you know, because I think like the Muslims did it, which I mean, it all stems back to, you know, the Israelites, but I mean everything else, like,
so the Buddhists, the big three.
Yeah, the Buddhists don't do that. The Shinto don't do that. The Hindu don't do that. You know, they're like, whatever. Be you be you, and, you know, it doesn't matter. But it's like, the others are kind of like,
basically.
Here, I'm going to force this upon you, and you're going to get force-fed it, and you're going to like it. Oh, that was your sacred place?
We're going to take the cornerstones of your religion and make them a bad thing in ours so that you're the bad guy.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so that I just had to jump in there. So.
Yeah, no worries. Another band that had a pretty large influence, not necessarily musically, but more like from a visual aspect, would be a band called Merciful Fate. They were a Danish group. The lead singer went by the stage name of King Diamond. He was one of the first guys to do the white, like, grease paint with black lines and stuff on it to just kind of look a little weird. So that's kind of where a lot of that whole idea for corpse paint came from, and we'll get more into that as we go. And I do have to throw in the fact that most of the guys that were early on in this whole genre, like in the mid to late 80s, like 90% of them are like, oh yeah, no, Black Sabbath is absolutely the reason I started playing music, and they're a huge inspiration for how we play and all this stuff. And I'm like, you know, it's one of those groups that, yeah, everybody knows them, but they don't necessarily get a lot of recognition for what they've done for music in general.
Yeah.
Black Sabbath is fucking awesome.
Yep. But like, I think the face paint, though, didn't come from Black Sabbath, because Black Sabbath didn't do that. The first ones to actually do
face paint.
But
not Black Sabbath, but Merciful Fate. Because it's not the same style. It's not the same style as Kiss, where it's like, look at all the, you know, this shit. No, his looked like almost like he'd been struck by lightning, because there's just fucking crazy lines and all these different directions and stuff. Really, really weird.
Yeah, but I'm pretty sure that they got the inspiration for that from Kiss, just because Kiss was the first ones to do that. They were the first band to paint themselves up, to dress like, you know, like they were worship, like fucking satanic worshipers and stuff like that, like fucking spikes and everything else.
But they just did it for shock value. They'd had no, you know. Here, I'll send you a picture of what I'm talking about with the.
But that's kind of what these guys were. That's kind of a bit of a shock value.
But these guys meant what they were doing. This wasn't like, sure, hey, we're going to make it all scary and shit, so your parents don't want to listen to your music.
Yeah.
So one of the most common themes across the entire genre, from like the first wave of black metal up into modern day, is the inclusion of a lot of anti-religious and occasionally flat out satanic lyrics. And I mean, I'm not going to sit here and, you know, fucking bitch and complain about, you know, anybody's beliefs, because I really don't care. It doesn't bother me. If you don't like the music, don't listen to it. It's that simple. It's that's the way I've always looked at it. You don't have to be like, well, this is satanic, so nobody should listen to it. Well, maybe people want to. Maybe just because you don't want to doesn't mean that it should be banned. You know, if you don't like it, change fucking station. I don't care.
Exactly.
So I think the best place to really jump into the meat of where we're going to get into this would be 1984 in Oslo, Norway, with one of the most famous and infamous bands in the genre, Mayhem. So these guys were the first like Norwegian black metal band to really gain any kind of like actual real like notoriety and believability. Like these guys were touring from time to time. So they were the first ones to really kind of get out there and you know, get their feet out into it. The band was originally formed by, and I'm going to butcher this dude's name, Øystein Araseth, who went by the stage name of Euronymous, which is what we're going to call him for the rest of this, because I'm not going to keep saying his last name.
Yeah.
Who was the guitarist. Jørn Stubberud, who was the bass player, who would go by Necro Butcher, which we'll call him for the remainder of this. And the original drummer's name was Ketil Mannheim. So like pretty much any band, when they're first kind of getting their feet underneath them, they have some growing pains here and there. Guys come and go. The core of the band would be Euronymous and Necro Butcher. Those were the guys that stayed essentially through the whole thing in the beginning. So they released their first album, Death Crush, in 1987 on the record label was Poser Corpse Records, which is kind of cool. And this was actually the first record label that Euronymous owned. So they did an initial 1,000 pressings of their album on vinyl. And within 4 months, they had sold all 1,000 copies. They weren't really expecting to sell that many. They were like, oh, we'll sell, you know, 300 or 400, whatever. They sold all 1,000 copies in like a pretty quick period. And then they just kind of, it never really went back into print, because they're like, oh, we'll just do another one, I guess. But it was in 1988 that some of the other, like I said, some of the other members had gone their separate way and started some other projects, including the original singer and the original drummer, who kind of just fade off into obscurity at this point. So in 1988, Jan Axel Blomberg, who would go by Hellhammer, joins and takes over on drums. And it's kind of a funny story. Like they were looking for a drummer, and he showed up at their like where they're practicing, and basically just hands Euronymous a tape. He's like, oh, this is me playing. And he went in the other room and sat there, just kind of listened to it for like 4 or 5 minutes, came back in. He's like, yeah, get your stuff. You're fine. He's like, okay. And he was a kid. He was like 17 at the time when he joined the band. So he was not, you know, I don't think he was really expecting to just be thrown into it.
Yeah.
And then a Swedish guy by the name of Per Olin comes in as the vocalist, and he gave himself the name Dead. This dude is real interesting. And I did do a little bit of digging to try to get into his early life to figure out where some of his mental health issues, I guess we're going to call it, came from. So when he was really young, his parents divorced, and while his mother was trying to get her shit together, he just kind of bounced around from family member to family member for a couple of years. And then he eventually ends up living back with his mom and his older brother, Anders. When he was a kid, he was real short and scrawny, really like small little kid, which obviously, you know, makes you a prime target for bullies. One day he's surrounded by a group of like 8 or 9 older kids that just kicked the fuck out of him. They beat him so badly that they thought they killed him, and then they took off. So he dragged himself home, goes through the front door, gets into the main room in the front of the house, and collapses on the floor just as his mother walks out of the kitchen to see who's there. So she rushes into the hospital, and when he got there, he was actually pronounced dead by the doctors due to internal bleeding. There was a lot of internal damage. He had like a ruptured spleen. They beat the shit out of this kid. He probably should have died. Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, to rupture somebody's spleen just by beating him and not hitting him with like an implement is something. So,
wow.
And I mean, at this point in time, he's like 9 or 10 years old. He's just a kid. He's, not a teenager, not an adult. But after they revived him, he would start having these horrific dreams of like death and dying. And due to some of his injuries, he actually suffered from sleep apnea, which as a kid caused him to have these dreams that he was being suffocated, because you're laying in bed on your back and you can't breathe. And there's also some possibility that he may have had some like sleep paralysis to go along with that, which a lot of like Scandinavian countries, they do have what's referred to as the old hag, which was basically a demon that would come and sit on your chest and you'd wake up and you can't breathe, you can't move. It was the way they explained sleep paralysis, essentially. So there's a possibility that that's kind of what he had going on a little bit. So before Mayhem, he had been in a band called Morbid, but after recording a demo and one studio album, he broke the band up. It wasn't his band, but he's like, nah, we're done. So these other two guys had started it, and he came in, and he's like, no, I think we're done. We're done here. Piss off. He ended up taking a bunch of cassettes of the band to Euronymous in hopes that maybe, like, because he knew that Mayhem was in the process of trying to rebuild and they needed a vocalist. So he brought a bunch of demos to him, essentially. He was like, hey, take a listen, see what you think. And he liked him. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. Come on in. So he joins the band, and the entire band would actually move into a house that that Dead owned. I can't remember if it was Dead or Euronymous, but one of them owned this house. It was just out. Euronymous. It was way the hell out in the woods. I think it may have been Euronymous. You're right, I think.
Yeah, I think it was.
But this is this house is way the hell out in the woods. If you see pictures of it, it's super fucking creepy because it's like up in the trees, up on this hill, and it's just it looks like an abandoned house, which it probably was. But it was just outside of Oslo in a town called Kragstad. And once all the members of the band are under the same roof, they started realizing just how weird Dead was as a person. He didn't really talk much to anybody. And when anybody talked to them, he would basically give them like a one word answer if he answered them at all. And I think it may have had something to do with his childhood trauma, where he just kind of grew up a little awkward and didn't really know how to handle people. At least Pear didn't, because Dead was a different person completely, you know? So when he did start a conversation with anybody, it was usually revolving around his obsession with death and wanting to die just so he could experience it again, which is fucking dark.
Yeah.
So this part's kind of fun. Actually, he had he made a homemade spear that he would kind of walk around the outside of the house with. And anytime stray cats came along, he'd try to kill them with it because he fucking hated cats. It's like, I get it, dude. I'm a dog person too, but I'm not going to I'm not running around trying to spear, you know, random cats and shit. But it is kind of weird that he disliked cats, so much, considering he did share a hobby with them. He liked killing birds, but unlike the cats that are basically going to eat the bird or bring it back to the owner and go, hey, you're a terrible hunter, I brought this to you, he would actually store them in plastic grocery bags and boxes under his bed and let them rot. And he would tend to bag some of these up with him to bring when they went out to do a show. And before they went out on stage, he would kind of open the bag up and just jam his face into it and just start breathing. So he's inhaling dead bird, essentially. And the other real fucking weird thing that he would do is when they had a show coming up, he would go outside and dig a big hole in the clothes he was going to wear on stage. He would throw in it and bury for 4 or 5 days so that when he dug them up, he would, quote, smell like the grave, and then start huffing dead birds and then go out on stage and do his thing. So the first live show that he did with the band was February 3rd of 1990 at Full Cat House in Jessheim, Norway. And during the show, he had his bird bag, brought it up on stage with him. And in between songs, while people are kind of, you know, they're still like all fucking fired up and stuff, he reaches into his back pocket and whips out a pocket knife and just starts fucking slashing his arms. He's like slashing both of his arms across his wrists, up and down the fronts and backs of his arms. And people said they saw him making fists like very quickly. So he's standing there kind of just like pumping his fingers together to make fists, getting the blood flowing back to the ends. And then he just started spinning his arms and throwing blood at people in the crowd. And they went fucking crazy. They loved it. Absolutely loved it. But he realized that he got himself a little bit too deep, so he ended up having to go backstage and wrap both of his arms with fucking electrical tape just to try to staunch the bleeding a little bit, which I don't know if you've ever put electrical tape directly on an open wound. It sucks. It's not fun, because then you peel it off and you start bleeding again.
A little. Not too bad.
So just kind of – so picture this guy. He's like – he's right around 6 feet tall. Probably weighs a little over 100 pounds. He was really thin and just fucking gaunt, sunken in eyes, and just like the white paint with black rings around his eyes. He looks like a corpse, and he's out there covered in blood and electrical tape. Looks like he just walked out of a horror movie.
I just sent you a picture of Rodimus and Death.
Oh, I've got that one.
Okay.
I pre-saved that one. It's actually the exact same picture.
Yeah.
So the onstage acts of self-mutilation continued through their tour. They toured through Norway and Germany, and they eventually end up in Izmir, Turkey. And this is where they start getting into some trouble. Because believe it or not, Muslim countries kind of frown on the kind of shit that they're doing, you know, like, you know, public displays of mutilation, blaspheming against God. Not a big fan of that one. So they're about halfway through their set, and someone from the police department cuts power to the stage, and the band got so pissed off that they started cussing out the crowd and spitting on people. And Necro Butcher got a little out of hand and ended up getting arrested. I believe he went down into the crowd and beat the shit out of some guy. So Aronimus had to bail him out. And as soon as he was out of jail, they split. They got the hell out of the country. And they headed back for Europe proper. So toward the end of 1990, Dead and Euronymous start butting heads pretty regularly. And as they're doing this, it becomes more frequent where Dead is withdrawing away from the rest of the band. He's hanging out in his room. He spends a lot of time writing letters and just kind of like drawing. I've got a quote here from Necro Butcher. He says, Dead just sat in his room, getting more and more depressed. He and Euronymous were getting on each other's nerves a lot. And Necro Butcher also tells a story that one night Dead went outside to sleep in the woods because Euronymous was playing synth music, which Dead hated, which, I mean, everybody does. Nobody wants to listen to synthesizers, you know, unless you're like super, super into fucking Van Halen. Nobody wants any of that shit.
Yeah.
So Euronymous gets pissed off that he is pissed off Dead, who's like, fuck this, I'm just going to go sleep out in the woods because I don't want to listen to your bullshit. So Euronymous goes outside, starts waving a fucking 20-gauge shotgun around in the air and firing off shots. It's like, hey, motherfucker, what are you doing hiding in the woods and just blasting shots off on the up in the air? So right about here may be a good time to take a break. And then we'll come back in with the events of April 8th of 1991. Spoiler alert, it does get a hair graphic from here on out. If anybody wants to avoid it, you can. But until then, we will be right back. We are back. So we're going to pick up on April 8th of 1991. I'm just going to get right into it here. This is a letter that was found on the table in the house that the band shared. Quote, excuse the blood, but I've slit my wrists and neck. It was the intention that I would die in the woods so that it would take a few days before I was possibly found. I belong in the woods, and I've always done so. No one will understand the reasoning for this anyway. I give some semblance of an explanation. I am not a human. This is just a dream, and soon I will wake. It was too cold, and the blood was coagulating all the time. Plus, my new knife is too dull. If I don't succeed dying to the knife, I will blow all the shit out of my skull. Yet, I do not know. I left all my lyrics by Let the Good Times Roll. Plus, the rest of the money. Whoever finds it gets the fucking thing. As a last salutation, may I present life eternal. Do whatever you want with the fucking thing. I didn't come up with this now, but 17 years ago. And the lyrics to Life Eternal that were included in this note. A dream of another existence you wish to die. A dream of another world you pray for death. To release the soul, one must die. To find peace inside, you must get eternal. I am an immortal, but am I human? How beautiful life is now when my time has come, a human destiny, but nothing human inside. What will be left of me when I'm dead? There was nothing left when I lived. What you found was eternal death. No one will ever miss you. So that was the suicide note that Per Olin, dead, left on the table. When he decided that his time here was done. So there's actually a very interesting theory that I found, and it makes a lot of sense. Some psychologists that have kind of studied into the whole this whole event think that Dead may have suffered from something called Cotard syndrome. It's a very, very rare mental disorder where the affected person has the belief that they're already dead or they don't they never existed in the first place. Another part of this is they believe that their blood and internal organs are gone, missing, or have been taken. So another famous psychopath that would actually be diagnosed completely with it was Richard Chase, who is a serial killer that at some point in time we have to cover because that dude was a monster. Just possibly one of the worst serial killers that's ever existed. And it's not because of the numbers. It's because of what he did. Huh. The guy was fucking disgusting.
Yeah.
So after he wrote the letter, you know what? I think, yeah, let me go into what happened here. And then we're going to jump into the first of our, the first of our Varg notes. Which is like Cliff Notes if Cliff was a white supremacist.
Yeah.
So he wrote the letter, cut both of his wrists with a hunting knife, stabbed himself in the neck, and then after realizing that he wasn't bleeding out fast enough, he went into Euronymous's room, found the 20-gauge shotgun that had been waved around and fired off in the air previous to this. Unfortunately, it was a very short 20-gauge shotgun, so unlike how most people would think where you put the barrel in your mouth and pull the trigger with your toes or you put it under your chin or whatever, it was sawed off short enough that he could actually put the barrel of it to his forehead and pull the trigger. So it was a fucking mess. So let's hop into the first of our, I can attempt to post the picture that was shared.
Yeah.
No promises that it won't get taken down, but I can try.
It was such a mess that. Well, I mean, the guy to find him was actually Euronymous. Oh.
Because let's get into that here.
Because Euronymous, what was it? Death. Because everybody had gone somewhere, and Death was like, "I don't want to go," because he was so like,
"Yeah, I'm staying here. I'm staying home."
Yeah, and Euronymous is like, "Oh shit, I forgot my keys," so he jumps. Yeah. Well, he jumps through a window.
Let me hop into that because we've got the actual explanation from our buddy Varg here, who was this motherfucker liked to talk. So he says, quote, "We had agreed that I should send him some ammo for his shotgun. He didn't have any ammo. I did when I came back home, and a month later he shot himself," and just completely fucking ice cold about the whole thing. Many people speculate that Araseth, Euronymous, himself was the man that killed Dead. It's one of the many rumors. There are a lot of rumors, and I don't think that's true simply because he was out of town when that happened. When he came back home, he didn't have his key. They had a couple of keys between everybody, and he had left his there. So he climbed through an open window, and when he crawled in, he found dead in the bed, and then he laughs right here with his, his brains blown out, literally. He shot himself in the forehead. The brain had fallen out from his skull. It was, grotesque. And the first thing he did was not to call the cops. It was, "Hey, where's my photo equipment?" So, yeah.
Yeah, the fucker goes and gets his fucking camera to take a fucking picture, a couple pictures of the fucking body. And then has, who the fuck was it? Another band member developed the fucking... develop them.
So the worst part about this whole thing is he took a couple pictures of him laying there, and then he kind of started staging the scene a little bit differently. So he kind of like tipped him up a little bit. He put the shotgun next to him, took a couple pictures like that, moved stuff around again, laid it back down, put the shotgun across his chest, took a couple pictures like that. So he took his time before he, moved on to be like, "Oh no, my friend shot himself. I got to call the cops." So here's where we get into another real tricky place where there's a lot of speculation and a lot of stories. So the story here is, and it's half true, half not, that Euronymous took pieces of Dead's brain, cooked and ate it. That part of it's not true. The part that is true is that he took as many of these skull fragments that he could find, and he made necklaces out of a few of them. And another allegedly part here is that he kept a couple of chunks of this just floating around for him to chew on whenever he was bored, just to, chew on a chunk of skull. But he gave these necklaces out to other musicians that he found would, quote, be worthy of having a piece of them. And this is confirmed because Morgan Hackinson, who is the guitarist for Marduk, has one of these necklaces with a skull fragment. And there's actually an eBay thread that you can follow where someone had put one of these up on eBay, one of these skull necklaces, and it sold for like 3,700 euros. So it kind of leads more credence into the fact that this actually fucking happened. So after he ends up calling the police, he calls Necro Butcher, who was, of all the guys in the band, he was probably the closest to Dead. Like, they kind of understood each other. They would talk a little bit here and there. They knew when the other one didn't want to talk, and they would just kind of like, "Okay, whatever," and they'd, peel off and do their own thing. So he calls Necro Butcher, who was off visiting family, and he says, "Dead has done something really cool. He killed himself." And Necro Butcher in this quote says, "I thought, have you lost it? What do you mean cool?" And then according to him, Euronymous then says, "Relax, I have photos of everything." and Necro Butcher continues on. I was in shock and grief, and he was had told him, okay, don't even fucking call me before you destroy those pictures. The photos would go on to be used as the cover for a bootleg album called Dawn of the Black Hearts, which was like a set of like, it's, I couldn't really find one way or the other. It's between 4 and 6 songs that were recorded at a live event that they had done without them knowing it. And then Euronymous found out that somebody had recorded it, and he bought the songs from him and made this fucking album just to the whole thing, like from the music to the photo to actually putting the two together and selling it as an album, I think was a fucking vanity project for this guy. Euronymous was an asshole. There is no denying that. He was a fucking asshole. And of course, not to let a good tragedy go to waste, he started to really push the Deadhead, killed himself to increase the image of the band and just how brutal and violent the music was. He went as far as saying in an interview that Deadhead killed himself, quote, because black metal has become too trendy and commercialized. This is a guy that you lived with, that you considered a friend, and you're like, ah, fuck it. Let's make some money off it.
But part of me with him, as time goes on, is he's kind of a bit of a poser a little bit.
He is a poser. Absolutely.
Yeah, he talks a great game, like he does all this stuff, but he doesn't really actually do it. So
yes, and we'll get into some of the stuff that,
like, the stuff with Varg later on.
Yeah,
you know, where it's like some of the stuff with him, like with in Euronymous, kind of like, you know, one saying another, you know, and it's like,
yeah,
Varg's like, well, all right, walk to walk if you're talking the talk, you know.
And like, as much of a piece of shit as Varg is, he backed up what he was saying, you know?
But, I mean, I wouldn't really say, I don't really call him a piece of shit, though. That's part of me.
Oh, he is a huge piece of shit, though. Like, the more, we'll get into it next week with him. He is a huge piece of shit. And you'll understand why I say that.
I mean, from what I read, from what I saw in that video, I didn't really, I don't know.
That documentary, they kind of paint him in a more relatable light, and then once he gets out of prison and he starts, like, he has this freedom to start doing some other shit, you're like, oh, they shouldn't let you out, you suck. Cool. So back into this. So Necro Butcher was so pissed off and disgusted with Euronymous about this whole thing that he left the band, that he was one of the founding members of. He left this band and then starts planning on a way to do something about what has happened. He starts planning on how to kill Euronymous himself. So while he's off plotting, the band is back down to 2 members, which would be Euronymous and Hellhammer, who is the drummer that Euronymous actually bullied into developing the photos of Dead's corpse. Because he worked at a photo development kind of thing at the time. So by 1992, Euronymous had started to build the band back up to full strength. He brought in Snorri Rook of Blackthorn. I'm sorry, his stage name would be Blackthorn, of the band Thorns, to play rhythm guitar. And Hungarian vocalist Attila Zihar is how I'm going to go with that. And then he brings in possibly the most infamous person in the entire black metal scene, a guy that we've already mentioned a couple of times, Varg Vikernes, who was it's kind of weird because all these other bands are multiple people. He was kind of like the Nine Inch Nails of black metal, where he was the only member of the band Burzum.
No, there's two.
No, it was just him. It started off as 2, and then it cut down to just him. So he was doing all the instrumentals and the singing and stuff.
But with him, So here's okay. So I'm gonna cut in on this one, because from what he was talking about in the little documentary or whatever it was you want to call it, he was saying that for one of his albums, he was like, I want to make it sound like the most disgusting thing you've ever heard, the worst, most awful thing you've ever heard. And he's like, he referred
to it as corpse music.
Yeah, he's like, how are you gonna do
that?
I want
it to sound like the music is dead.
I want to get the most like decrepit, the worst like microphone you could ever get. And he goes, well, we ended up with a headset or something to talk into.
Yeah.
And then we had a little
they used a Marshall amplifier where half of it was blown out.
Yep. He was like, yeah, we're gonna have a little Marshall thing and little amplifier, little speaker. It listened to it because they played a little bit of it. Holy crap.
That sounds like dog shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, like half the fucking amplifier was blown out, like barely worked. He's like, oh, it was great.
Yeah. And like one of the other guys was like,
weird dude.
Yeah, one of the other guys is like, yeah. So I want to get the recorder or something. I want to record this, but he didn't want like one of these brand new recorders to like record it that costs like 2,000 crowns or whatever. So he went to this like little black market.
Yeah, he had some guy offer him one. It was like barely used, like this brand new like four stage like recording thing, and the guy wanted like 2,500 kroner for it, which is like 11. I did the conversion. It's like $1,500 American, and he's like, no. He goes like,
black market, it's like back some fucking alleys, like
black market, like flea market thing.
Yeah, and like found like a fucking tape recorder. It was like, oh, perfect. This will do.
It doesn't reverse, but it does hit record. So,
yeah, that's what we want. It works. I'm like, holy.
Yeah, fuck. He got it. He said I got it for like 50 kroner, which is like $5 American. He's like, it was perfect.
Yeah.
But that dude, Fenris, it was him. One of the guys they follow through most of this. Seems like a regular, normal dude, like fucking works at the post office, like, you know, seems like a generally, like, genuinely good dude.
He has his own record. He has a record thing.
Yeah, he does now, but when all this stuff was going on, he was just, like, working in the post office and fucking listening to music and shit. Because I saw another thing with him where he said he's the drummer for Dark Throne. So like when they first started out, like they started like gaining a little bit of momentum, his boss wrote him up a couple of times because he would go back to ask him a question, you know, like because he's back in the sorting room. So he's just kind of like going through envelopes and stuff. And his boss would stand there and yell and end up having to come up and poke him in the shoulder and be like, why are you not listening to what I'm saying? And he'd take his headphones off. He's like, oh, sorry. He's like just sitting there like fucking listening to music and filing shit off. Which apparently is a no-no in the Norwegian post office. I don't know.
I guess. So it was like funny how like the show, we can link the show. People can watch it, I think. Be the kind of cool thing.
Oh yeah, for sure.
So they can be confused as us. But he was like he starts off, he's like on a train, and for some reason they like search his bags. he's like, okay, they found what the fuck? They found something.
I got nailed for my tear gas. They had a fucking can of tear gas.
They found the tear gas, so I'm gonna get a fine for that. But they didn't find the drugs. I'm like, oh my god!
Of course not.
Like, you're fucking incredible, dude. But anyway, yeah. So
where we're gonna end this episode is we're gonna talk about Helvet, which was a huge part of the scene at the time. So Euronymous opened his own record store and called it Helvet, opened the place in 1991. Like, I mean, it was a huge, huge store. Like, it was way bigger than it needed to be for a record store. So he got a bunch of his buddies together. They open it up. They go through and they paint all the walls and all the furniture black. They start hanging medieval weaponry and bones and helmets and shit like that on the walls. And the place had no electricity, like in the main part of the shop. So the entire thing is just lit by candles, just to make it even creepier. And the part for me that bothers me the most is that he didn't open this place by selling a bunch of his records or anything like that. He borrowed all of the money to open this place from his mom and opens a fucking record store for him and his buddies to hang out. And then when people come in that have a different taste of music than him, they just fucking berate them until they left. You're looking for something new? Fuck you, get out.
Or it was like Varg was saying, that like, he goes, we'd be sitting there and we'd be talking about cornflakes. How you like your cornflakes? Do you like your cornflakes crunchy or do you like your cornflakes soggy? And he's like, I like my cornflakes crunchy. And I think it was Euronymous is like, no, you must take them and you must put them in the milk and let them get soggy. That's the perfect.
Yeah.
He goes, that's the way to eat it. He goes, and all of a sudden, like, this kid comes in. He says, we're all just sitting there in normal clothes. He goes, all of a sudden, this kid comes in and he's got this shirt, like this outfit on jacket with like all these spikes on it and everything else. Yeah. And we're all like looking at him like, what the hell, basically? And he's like, they were looking at us. And they were like, what are you looking at? And they were all like, he's like, hello? And he goes, they were all like shy. And they were blushing and everything else.
And then they run off and they tell their friends, Varg spoke to me. Varg talked to me. He's like, it was weird. But it's like, you look at these guys and you wonder what the conversations are that they're having. These motherfuckers are talking about cereal. And then some kid wanders in and he's like looking at the shit on the walls. And they're like, the fuck do you want? Get out of here.
But he thought
they refuse to help people. They're just like, eh.
But he thought he was the kid was weird looking. Like these kids were weird looking coming in with fucking spikes on their stuff. They're like, he was like, it was kind of like almost like a weird looking thing because he goes, that's not what we were. You know, we didn't really like do that. But
yeah, they weren't walking around town like that. But like when they went on stage, it was a different story. Because like this is just like, I'm going to wear my fucking my jeans and my black t-shirts around town because that's just how I dress. I'm not going to walk around covered in fucking blood and face paint and shit.
But this is the same guy that was like Varg was the same guy that's hanging out in a store like this. But at the same time, because like it was local owned and everything. This is the same guy. He fucking despised, I don't know if he still does, but like does not like McDonald's and all this other shit.
I've got so many Varg quotes for next week with stuff like that, and they're fun.
They shot at fucking McDonald's.
Yeah,
I'm crying out loud.
So they did all the painting and all that. They painted the outside of the main door black. And they painted Helvet, which was, again, the name of the store at the top of the door, in blood red, which in Norwegian, that translates to Hell's Punishment. Hell being the goddess of the underworld in the Norse pantheon. So these guys, they take their ancestral religion very seriously.
Yeah.
And we'll get into that again next week with Varg, where he fucking, not a big fan of Christians.
No,
but the reason that this place was so important is it became kind of the central meeting grounds for members of all these different bands, like Mayhem, Emperor, Burzum, which, funny story, I had to figure out what the hell that word meant because I thought it was just made up. The name Burzum actually means darkness in black speech, which was the language of Mordor from Lord of the Fucking Rings. So yes, these guys are all nerds too. So, so they would meet up in the store, or they'd kind of like tend to head down to the basement and they would drink and talk. And Euronymous actually gave this whole like little clique that he had built together. He gave them the nickname of the Black Circle.
Yeah.
He's got to be fucking dramatic about everything. Even when they just like, they just go hang out and they're like drinking wine and shit and talking. But one of the big things that would go on here is they were just kind of discussing the music itself, how it needs to move forward, recording techniques. They're trading tapes. They're just kind of hanging out and just being dudes. So kind of a weird detail, but the guy that would go on to be the drummer for the band Emperor would go by the name of Faust. He worked in the shop as the clerk. So he was the guy that was cashing everybody out. So he moved from Oslo. He moved to Oslo from Lillehammer.
Yeah.
And he had nowhere to stay. So he basically just slept behind the counter. He had like a little bed and shit set up behind the counter. So he lived at the shop. But the reason he moved.
Wasn't he Oslo like 17?
From Lillehammer. Yeah, he was a kid.
He was only like 17.
Yeah. But the reason he moved from Lillehammer to Oslo is because he was wanted for questioning in the murder of a gay man in Lillehammer. And he was like, whoop, sorry, gotta go. And fucking split town.
Yeah.
So Helvet would actually also become the recording area for Euronymous's new label, again, paid for with his mother's money. The label is called Death Like Silence. And a bunch of bands would actually record there, including all the ones that we just mentioned. And another one that's a very like pretty big band now is Dark Throne. Where if you check out the documentary that we've been kind of citing through this whole thing, it's called Until the Light Takes Us. They follow the drummer of Dark Throne, Gilv Nagal, who goes by Fenris. And he kind of walks them through the history of the whole black metal scene and, you know, what brought the music to where it was and how, you know, it kind of has changed as it's gone through. It's a super interesting thing to watch. And like I said before, he seems like a genuinely good dude. He never took part in any of these murders or what we're going to get into next week with the church burnings, anything like that. He just, you know, he kind of kept to himself, worked at the post office and had a couple of pet cats. So,
but he just didn't, a he
pretty
didn't,
fucking regular dude,
but he didn't disagree with them. He was,
no, he like, didn't disagree, but he also didn't want to go to fucking jail.
No, but I mean, he was still like, you know, like, yeah, I like it. But like most of the stuff now, it seems like when he's talking about, like they're talking to him about it, the different stuff in the movie, the documentary, he's like, kind of like, dismayed a little bit. He's like, you're fucking insane. He's like, you know, he's like, I don't like how it is now. He doesn't like some of the stuff. He doesn't even like his own fucking music that he writes, he says. He goes, it should make you want to kill yourself.
Yeah, and that's the thing is like that as it became more popular and you have all these other people come in, they kind of water down the whole thing. They start to, you know, that you start to have the people that are like, oh yeah, look, we're so fucking hardcore. We talk about doing this in our music and we talk about doing that in our music. And then you have like the old guard where these guys were like, yeah, but here's the thing. Have you ever thrown a fucking decapitated pig head at somebody in the crowd? No? Okay, so shut the fuck up then, because that's what we've been doing for years. Like a lot of these bands, like, again, they're like on stage, they have fucking spikes driven into the stage where they've got like sheep heads and fucking pig heads and shit like that, like actual decapitated animal heads that they dunk in just buckets of blood and fucking peg out into the crowd at people.
Yeah.
You know, these guys were fucked up. Like they did a lot of really weird shit. And a band that kind of came along a little bit later, Gorgoroth is the name of it, which again comes from Lord of the Rings, because you know why not, nerds and shit. They did a show in I can't remember what town it was in Poland, but it was the birthplace of Pope John Paul II. And they did the show on his birthday. And as they come out, one of the guys is like wheeling this thing out behind him, and it comes out onto stage, and it's a fucking cross where they've got some woman tied up naked, like crucified to this cross. And as they're going, he just kind of grabs it and twists it upside down and puts it in place. So they have a naked woman crucified upside down on stage in the Pope's hometown on his birthday. I don't know if you can take much more of a shot at fucking at Christianity or Catholicism than that. Like, that's a but that's like a pretty big one.
The biggest thing was like
the fucking try-hard stuff right there.
They all thought like that, like, I mean, we'll talk about it like late, you know, next episode, probably, you know, more likely, but like the media portrayed them as being Satanists, and they're like,
yes,
and it's kind of like they're like trying to tell them like, no, we're not, but whatever, no. You just want to keep going with it, so okay, whatever, you know.
And a lot of them were like, well, we're not really Satanists, but if it's gonna scare you guys, we'll say we're Satanists.
Yeah,
you know, if the shoe fits, we'll go with it, I guess. But yeah, I'm not quite done with the research still, but I'm very fascinated to finish this. And Jesus Christ, like I said, I've still got 3 pages of Varg quotes that we got to work in next week, where the dude is fucking nuts.
Part of me is like, he's fucking nuts, but part of me is like, maybe he's spot on with a lot of
the
shit.
And again, like I said, I can see his argument and parts of it make sense, but then once he got out of jail, he gets a little weird. I mean, he was always weird, but then like we could easily play a game of who said it. Was it Varg or Hitler?
Yeah.
You know, with some of his viewpoints where you're like, oh, you said that on the internet where people can read it? What the fuck is wrong with you?
Yeah.
This is a guy that was charged for hate crimes in a country he's never been to because of shit that he said on the internet. Jesus Christ. Like they put him on trial in a country he had never been to for hate speech. I'd like to know how the fuck that works. But
I have no clue.
But anyway, so next week we'll be back basically with the life and crimes of Varg, essentially, and I'm sure there'll be some other stuff to throw in there too. But yeah, it's gonna stay just as weird as it has been.
Yeah, talking about this gave me the damn hiccups.
Good, but. Anyway, Kevin, why don't you take us out of this?
So this is probably one of those episodes where you might want to have a pair of earphones or headbuds. Or, you know, if you...
What was that? I'm sorry, did you say earphones or headbuds?
I said headphones or... I said, no, you misheard me. I said headphones or earbuds.
I'm pretty sure you said headbuds. Oh.
Whatever.
Oh, I'm pretty sure you said headbuds, but I'll find out.
Whatever. You could say headbuds.
The fuck is a headbud?
I don't know. They go in your ears. Anyway.
Tiny ear speakers that plug into your head.
Little ear speakers that you can hear sound out of. So anyway, if you want a pair of headphones or earbuds, or because, you know, you don't want anybody to hear some of this fucking wacky shit, but if you were one of those ones like, you know what? Fuck yeah. I want you to hear it. You can get a Bluetooth speaker. Go over to a little place called studio.com. Check them out. And when you find what you want, put your promo code of DarkWindows15 in at the little discount section to get 15% off your entire purchase. Also, if you forget that, you can go over to another little place.
DarkWindowsPod.com. The home of the Dark Windows podcast. We have links to all of our social media. Facebook, we're at Dark Windows Podcast. We have Instagram, where we're at Dark Windows Pod. Twitter, which we use through Instagram because Twitter sucks. I hate Twitter. But you also have links to our Age of Radio page where you can listen to every episode of this shit show that we've ever recorded, including our old stuff. And you can also find your next favorite podcast at ageofradio.com. We've got something for everybody, whether it be history, true crime, nerd shit of every flavor and variety. We've got a little bit of everything. We've got sports. Go check us out, ageofradio.com. And sorry, ageofradio.org. I'm sorry, is the website. And got a little bit of everything there. Yes. So until
you can email, next week. You can email us at darkwindowspod@gmail.com. That's darkwindowspod@gmail.com. And you can say how shitty we are, or, you know, or give requests also, or how great we are. Or
you can contact us personally.
Yeah, or you can
802-558.
You're going to cut that out.
I'm going to leave that in. I'm going to give everybody your phone number.
No. Goddamn. No.
Nobody ever talks to me. Well, now they will, bitch. They're going to text you. You're going to get wiener pictures and stuff.
Yeah, thanks, dickhead. Anyway. And also, wherever you're listening to this, rate, review, and subscribe. You know,
yeah, I mean, that's still a pretty important thing.
Yeah. Well, I guess, and then with that said,
just because you can't see out into the dark doesn't mean that the dark can't see into you. Throw a severed pig head at that music button. Oh, gross, dude.